You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is August the 7th, 2015, one day after the first Republican presidential debates, actually one day since any presidential debates for the current season. The Democrats, of course, have yet to have their lineup squared away. Lots of mischief happening on that side. But in any event, I thank you for joining me, and we're going to be getting to that issue of the debates, what it means, what was said, what wasn't said, what was asked, what should have been asked. It's always great having you join me at the end of the week to play that game of catch-up, and certainly there's much to catch up on. Those of you who are familiar with me, familiar with my program, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. And that my focus, not always, but almost always, is on immigration and the way that it impacts so many of the challenges, so many of the threats confronting our nation, confronting our citizens. Hardly a single issue, immigration is truly a singular issue because it has such a profound impact across a broad spectrum of critical issues. And it's an issue that's almost never accurately portrayed in the media, almost never honestly discussed by the mainstream politicians. There are some stalwart souls out there who do speak the truth. But immigration is a cash cow for far too many industries, special interest groups, and individuals. So therein lies the problem. It's always the game of follow the money. Again, if you're familiar with me, you know that my own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word. I also have been for years writing for a terrific organization out on the West Coast in Santa Barbara, California, beautiful part of the country, and their terrific website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I write for Progressives for Immigration Reform. They're on the left. And you see, again, this is not about a left or right issue, folks, but a right or wrong issue. I write for the social contract. And in fact, and we'll get into this in a bit, I just wrote a major article for the social contract. It's entitled The 9/11 Commission Report and Immigration, an Assessment 14 Years After the Attacks, as the name clearly indicates. I did an analysis of where we are as we are approaching the 14th anniversary of the terror attacks of 9/11, especially from the perspective of immigration. And I will tell you that in my judgment, we have never been at a greater risk, never been made more vulnerable. And these are, frankly, self-inflicted wounds inflicted by an administration that, in my judgment, is out of control in unprecedented ways, but aided and abetted by the major political parties, both the repugnant cans and the Democrats, as I've come to refer to them. So we will get into that also, and of course this dovetails perfectly with the debates yesterday. So again, please check out my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. And by the way, my most recent article for CAPS is one that I think everybody should be taking a hard look at. You know, with all of the discussions about violence and all the discussions about young people with no futures, the real metric to measure border security, and that's pretty much the title for my most recent article for CAPS, has nothing to do with those doctored, altered, manipulated, spindled, you name it, the statistics from the Border Patrol. You know, we have 50 border states, not just the Mexican border, and those numbers are so deceptive. They're worthless. They are as worthless as the unemployment statistics spewed by the Labor Department. There is, however, a statistics that is irrefutable, and that paints the very clear picture that today America's borders are nothing more than speed bumps, especially to the determined and experienced smugglers. And we are not talking now about aliens. We are talking about heroin and cocaine. We are in the midst of what I believe is the worst heroin epidemic in the history of the United States. I was very much disconcerted by the fact that about, 6 months ago, a year ago, the New York City Police Department and other departments across the country were finding so many overdose cases that they were giving the antidote to heroin overdoses to police officers so that when they encountered those situations on patrol, they could take immediate action and save lives, because one of the things that heroin does is to suppress respiration and heartbeats, where people just die. And there is a medication, there is an antidote that can neutralize the effect of heroin on the central nervous system. And when they started giving it out to police departments around the country, I said, boy, we're in trouble. Well, let me tell you, if you thought that was bad, and if I thought that was bad, you're going to be shocked to know where they are now keeping a supply of the antidote to heroin overdose and where they are training people in the use of that antidote. Fasten your seatbelts. It's our schools. It's our public schools, our high schools. If you want to talk about the destruction of a generation of Americans, this is where the destruction is taking place. If you want to talk about violent crime, most crime has a nexus to the drug trade, drug use, drug dependency. It's unbelievable. It is startling. It is alarming. And the proceeds of the drug trade are going right into the bank accounts of the drug cartels, organized crime, and terrorist organizations. And now we have a president who goes to visit people in prison who have sold narcotics and makes a big deal about how they're turning their lives around while in prison, talking about releasing what he calls nonviolent drug criminals onto our streets. This is nothing short of creating mayhem, anarchy, pandemonium. Look, one of the reasons why crime rates had dropped was effective policing and the imprisonment of drug traffickers, drug dealers. I'm not talking about the guy or the gal who's caught with a little bit of personal use marijuana or even personal use hardcore drugs. These are folks that are suffering an addiction, and I don't know that jail is the right place for them. And when we hear about we've got to find alternatives, I think that's right. I think that's right. I don't think imprisoning those folks is going to really be helpful. There's got to be other ways of remediating their situation. But the thugs, the animals, the bums who peddle that crap on the streets need to go to jail for a very, very long time. And, you know, one of the things that the president maybe does not know, or maybe does know, I have no idea what goes on between his ears any longer, is that there's no such thing as nonviolent criminals selling drugs. The drug trade is the most violent, if you want to call it, illegal enterprise you could imagine. The level of violence is off the scale. And I speak from years of experience. You know, I spent 30 years with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. But for half of my career, I was assigned to the Drug Task Force and DEA Intelligence. I did 4 years of DEA Intelligence as the first immigration agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division up at the DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration in New York City. And then after that, I was promoted to the position of Senior Special Agent and assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. So when I'm talking about drugs, it's not as though I'm going off the reservation and getting into an area that I'm not familiar with. I will never do that. You know, when I have been on television or radio programs, very often the hosts are tempted to ask me about issues that I don't have real familiarity or real expertise. And I'm not going to waste anybody's time with my worthless ideas. Everybody's got ideas. They're as common as backsides. Everyone's got opinions. But my opinions on drugs are based on having conducted, I don't know how many arrests, investigations, and raids with the DEA, with FBI, with local and state police, with the ATF. So this is something that I have a lot of experience in. And it was a rare day that we went to a drug location where we did not come up with weapons, and I mean heavy-duty weapons, submachine guns, on occasion hand grenades, crazy armaments, bulletproof vests, flak jackets. These folks are having a war in our inner cities and in our towns across the United States, no less than a war. They kill each other for the proceeds. They kill each other for the drugs. This is all about violence. And when a criminal is caught with drugs, very often they will agree to plea bargain to drug possession with the intent to sell rather than the weapons, because they're looking to jockey for the best sentencing guidelines. So just because someone pleads guilty to trafficking or selling narcotics does not mean that that person wasn't armed, does not mean that there weren't weapons found at the location. It just means that at the end of the day, to dispose of the case, the prosecutor cut a deal with the defendant and allowed that person to plead guilty to simply one crime. Let's say it was possession of, you know, a certain quantity of narcotics. The drug trade is violent. The notion of turning drug, you know, traffickers, the people that are selling the drugs loose, is an invitation to the destruction of still more American lives and young American lives all too often. You know, we saw the riots in Baltimore and elsewhere, and the politicians got out of those air-conditioned limos. They stood in front of those floodlights. They made their great speeches, and they thumped the podium. Boy, they are great podium thumpers, aren't they? Maybe that's what we should call them from now on, the podium thumpers. And what changed? What changed? The drugs are out there in great abundance. People that are hungry and looking for work aren't doing any better. Every politician promises to create jobs, and nobody. And during the debate, no one ever asked anybody, how do you address the fact that the legal side of the immigration system admits more authorized foreign workers to enter America and work in America than the number of new jobs that are being created? How does that help Americans? How in the world does that help Americans? And by the way, as you would expect, and I don't blame the workers, they're taking advantage of the situation. Foreign workers are able to send money back to their families in their home countries. We are bleeding over between $125 and $200 billion every year in those remittances, money wired out of our economy. If you look at the multiplier effect, the idea that a dollar put into the economy generates $3, a dollar taken out takes away $3 in commerce, money that's not circulated. If you look at the increase of the annual increase of America's national debt, just getting rid of the remittances, just getting rid of that, would more than eliminate the annual growth in America's national debt. Nobody said that. Even Donald Trump, the businessman, who talked about the need to secure the border and what it costs when the drug money leaves the country, did not talk about what it costs when illegal aliens or legal aliens working in the United States send money home, what that does to the U.S. economy. This is not good for America, it's not good for Americans, but it's terrific for greedy individuals and groups that don't care about the damage they do to this country or our citizens. And I am so tired of being told that if you want the border secured and you want the immigration laws enforced that you're anti-immigrant. That is one of the biggest, juiciest, fattest lies in the world. This is not what this is about. We are pro-enforcement. And if you're pro-enforcement, then you're pro-immigrant, because we permit over 1 million lawful immigrants to enter the United States every year. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens every year under the laws that I enforced for 30 years. So if you support those laws, you are supporting the admission of over 1 million new immigrants. And maybe we should be rethinking how many we admit. I heard Laura Ingraham make that point the other day, and I think we need to look at it. We have far too few jobs, with far too many Americans chasing those jobs, being elbowed out of the way by foreign workers who aren't covered by Obamacare, And when we train students, they do not pay into the bankrupt Social Security and Medicare trust funds. This is damaging our country in many, many ways. And so when Donald Trump jumped up and said, you know, the Mexican border and build the wall and so forth, he was right. He talked about putting a big, beautiful door in the middle of the wall. Well, I want to know how wide the door is and who he plans to open it for. So, you know, things aren't always what they appear to be in Washington especially. And we've got to be very careful about what we're being told and what we think we're hearing. Because very often what we think we're hearing is not what we're hearing. Very often things aren't what they appear. You know, Washington lives in a parallel universe. Washington, D.C. is about convincing the voters that their demands are being met while the politicians find a way to make sure that nothing ever changes. So it's a lot more than the Mexican border. Now, Marco Rubio made some good points, and we're going to dissect that. Marco Rubio said, you know, everyone running that border isn't from Mexico. We have people from Honduras and El Salvador, and he mentioned some other Latin American countries. He's right, absolutely right. What he did not mention, that he should have mentioned, is that you have people from China, people from the Middle East, people from all sorts of countries running that Mexican border. They get into Mexico, head north. There are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Paraguay and Argentina. Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, they're there. We know there are Iranian shock troops, the Quds, the Red, you know, these are the Iranians, basically their commandos, are flying into Caracas, Venezuela every week on airlines directly from Tehran. They are operating under our nose in the Western Hemisphere. And it's believed that they're here in the United States. A couple of years ago, Peter King, when he was the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in Congress, talked about the Iranians who were in the United States. If you remember, 6 months before the last presidential election, about, 5 years ago, I guess this would have been. No, it's not 5 years. I'm sorry, I'm doing this backwards. It's about 3 years ago. We had the attempted assassination of the Saudi ambassador, the possible bombing of the Saudi embassy, and the Israeli embassies averted by our law enforcement and intelligence folks in the United States. The people that were planning to carry out the attack were hooked into the Quds. And Quds forces commander was just in Russia. Illegal travel. But we're cutting deals with Iran, even as the guy that runs the Quds forces illegally traveled outside of Iran. He wasn't supposed to. And we have a president telling us what a great deal he's making for us. He's buying us not only a three-legged racehorse, but a three-legged racehorse that stopped breathing and telling us that this horse is going to win the race. This is nuts. I mean, it's rare for me to commend Chuck Schumer, but finally Chuck came out and opposed Obama's treaty with Iran. Goodness gracious, I don't know why it took him this long. You really want to ask Mr. Obama whose side he's on, because increasingly my sense is it's not our side. Not our side. There is no explanation for the stuff that he is doing if you believe he wants what's best for America and Americans. Heroin is flooding our streets. Violent crime is up. Last week we had, I think, 20-something shootings in New York City because of Mayor de Blasio. We are electing cement heads. We need real solutions and not broad generalities. And I love that Donald Trump went out there and started this firestorm over immigration, an issue that everybody wanted to suppress. But beyond talking about the Mexican border, I'm not sure where Donald Trump stands on the rest of this broken immigration system. And what's broken about it isn't the kind of broken that says throw it out. It's broken because we never get enough agents. We never get enough personnel. We never do enough funding to get the job done. That's how we wound up in this mess. You know, it's remarkable. The president started to talk about reducing the number of active members of the U.S. military, and everybody jumped up, and everyone is still very worked up about it, as well we should be. Those numbers are down to prior to World War II levels, from what I understand. This is, again, an area of expertise I don't have. But reading the reports I've read, that's my sense. But why is nobody concerned that there are almost no agents doing interior enforcement of the immigration laws, which was a key bit of advice from the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony. You know, it's remarkable. Lindsey Graham said, well, we're fighting them over there, the terrorists, so we don't have to fight them here. Lindsey, wake up. Wake up. They're here. The World Trade Center is here. It was here in the United States, and the new one is here in New York, inside the United States. The Pentagon is in the United States. Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where that airliner went down on 9/11, is in the United States. We are fighting them here. We are fighting them here. And this notion of an either-or is insanity. You know, during the beginning of the Second World War, when the United States wanted to strike a psychological blow against Japan, and this is why history is so important to study it, General Doolittle flew bombers off an aircraft carrier and bombed Tokyo. It became a book. It became a movie, 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. The damage was minimal. The casualties were minimal. But it was done to tell the government of Japan, we can reach you. We can hurt you. You don't think that ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of these insanely violent organizations would love to do the same and maybe are preparing even as we speak? This notion that if we fight them there, nothing's going to happen here is as naive and wrong-headed as anything I've ever heard. So, you know, going back to Marco Rubio, he said, look, we don't just have Mexicans coming across the border, and that's good because we need to de-emphasize Mexico. As important as Mexico is, and I'm not giving them a pass, okay, I got a real problem with Mexico. But let's move away from that because that's all we keep thinking about, so we don't understand what really needs to be done as part of a cohesive overriding strategy. Now, Rubio said we have people overstaying visas, and we need to track that with entry and departure records. He's right. Well, the immigration laws were reformed in 1996. I actually worked with the chief counsel for the Immigration Subcommittee in Congress to help come up with ways of reforming the enforcement of our immigration laws. And one of the things that came out of that was the agreement that we would have to implement something that was at the time come to be known as U.S. Visit, to track the entry and departure of aliens. And then along came the 9/11 Commission, and they basically mandated it. And our government has spent well over $1 billion giving the money to Accenture, to create the system, and it still doesn't work. And I believe it doesn't work because the record of departures is hooked into the Visa Waiver Program, a program that is broadly supported by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, because they want people from other countries to be able to come to the United States without first applying for and receiving a visa, taking away a very important layer of security, because this is about corporate greed. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce partnered with the hotel, hospitality, and travel industries and some manufacturing associations to push for a program that they call the Discover America Partnership, obviously ignoring the fact that Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and these terrorist organizations have discovered America, ignoring the transnational gangs and narcotics organizations have discovered America. They don't care. They don't care. What they care about is more profits. This is greed-driven. I understand profit motive. I'm a capitalist. This goes beyond profit motive. This goes way beyond profit motive. They are willing to watch Americans die so that they can make money. I don't know why they don't simply partner with the Undertakers Association, because sure as hell they're drumming up business for them. They are certainly creating business for the Undertakers and the mortuaries and the cemeteries. And God only knows, maybe they're taking money from those organizations because Americans are dying. Lawful immigrants are dying. People are dying because we are permitting criminals and narcotics to enter the United States through the refusal of this administration to enforce the immigration laws. But again, this has been going on for quite some time, except that this administration has blown the doors off the whole situation in ways that would have been unimaginable before this guy took office. Change has indeed come to America, hasn't it? But nobody said a word about that, really, yesterday at the debate. So, I mean, I know with a minute per question, it's kind of a ridiculous way to do a debate. I really don't like the format. I would rather that they had fewer questions, maybe, you know, different, fewer people, something. Maybe give people 3 minutes to answer a question. I mean, these are newspaper headlines with no article, you know, all wind up with no pitch, whatever you want to call it. This is not the way to really have a dignified debate where you get good answers so you have some insight as to who we're dealing with. Those debates are job interviews for the next president of the United States, nothing less than that. But we can hope that as the campaigns continue and the debates continue, maybe we'll see some more meaningful answers. But in any event, you have Rubio saying, well, we need to implement this program that has been on the agenda for 20 years now, almost, folks. 20 years. We went to the moon in less than 10 years. Nothing happens even when it involves national security. We are moving glacially and the terrorists are not. I mean, I have never seen anything quite this bad. We are mired in muck and BS, and this is not about political correctness, and I'm going to get to this issue of political correctness shortly. So you have Rubio talking about this entry system, exit system, and then he said, when aliens fail to depart, we'll know who they are. Well, that's great. And he said we need a mandatory E-Verify program, and I agree with that. But here's what he didn't say. Here's what he wasn't asked. Here's what no one seems to be able to figure out. If you had a bulletproof exit entry system and you know every single illegal alien who's in the United States who failed to depart, two issues. Number one, most of the time we have no idea where they are. There used to be a requirement that every, I think it was either January or February, my age is catching up, it was Alien Report Month. And they used to have these public service announcements telling everybody to go to the post office and fill out that form if they were aliens in the United States. Not required. Should be. Should be. And when we admit aliens into the United States, very often all they do is scribble down, you know, hotel in New York. Nobody even knows half the time when they give addresses if the addresses really exist. During the Carter administration, when the U.S. Embassy was seized by the Iranians, I was assigned to go out and look for Iranians who are in the United States out of a concern that some of them might be involved in terrorism, sabotage, whatever. And to be very blunt, we couldn't find our backside with a flashlight in both hands. Nothing has changed. So we'll know who didn't depart. We still won't know where they are. And Mr. Rubio did not say a word about hiring enough agents that you can really put people out there to look for them. If we are lucky, of the 7,000 ICE agents who are employed by immigration, by DHS, maybe 3,000 are doing immigration work. And that 7,000 figure only exists or appears in a report that was 2 years old in 2013. If you go to the DHS website, you can find out exactly how many Border Patrol agents we have. You can find out exactly how many immigration inspectors we have, and they're in the 20s of thousands. Each one is 20-something thousand. And you can find out that the TSA has 45,000 people who screen passengers getting on board airplanes, 45,000 people. And we have about 3,000 ICE agents for the whole country. So even if we know who the illegals are and where they are, what do you plan to do when you're dealing with millions of illegal aliens and 3,000 agents who are also supposed to be parts of task forces, supposed to go after criminal aliens, supposed to investigate alien smuggling, supposed to investigate fraud rings? So what does that leave us with, about 18 agents to look for people that overstayed their visas? Employer sanctions. Again, E-Verify. If an employer fails to abide by the law, who's going to do the audits? We have no manpower. I always think back to that episode of Maxwell Smart, you know, Get Smart, for those of you old enough to remember that. Well, it was actually a remake of the film not long ago. And there's this great scene where he and Agent 99, played by Barbara Feldon, are taken hostage and they're tied up. And he's telling the captors, you know, there's a whole battalion of police officers headed this way. And the guy doesn't believe him. And he keeps whittling down the numbers, and finally he gets to the point and he says, well, would you believe there's two cops and a rowboat coming this way? I mean, that's where we are, two cops and a rowboat. There is nobody there to enforce the laws. So for all this macho talk about we need to know who's here and we need to have mandatory e-verify and we need to track those people who failed to depart, who's going to arrest them? Now, go downstream a little bit. We have, I believe the number is about 300 immigration judges. If you arrest these folks and they insist on having a hearing, which they're entitled to, when will we give them an appointment for? In what decade? So pretty quickly, the detention facilities get filled up, and they have to turn these folks loose. So we dug them out of the woodwork. I've been there myself many times as an agent, chased some guy five blocks, have the guy lie, roll around on the ground. He tries to resist, and then you bring him in. And I testified about this at a hearing, and I said, you go to your boss. And the boss says, hey, there's no room at the inn. So take some photographs, see if you can get a solid address, and cut them loose. But the good news is we kept the statistic so Congress heard how many thousands of aliens we apprehended. I felt like I worked for Fish and Wildlife. All that was missing was putting a tag in their ear and letting them go again. This is insanity. This is insanity. We would have been better off not arresting those people. I mean, think how stupid that is. You chase a guy for five blocks. He resists arrest. You roll around on the ground. He lies about his identity. It takes 45 minutes to figure out who in blazes you've arrested. And then after all that, your boss says, oh, yeah, let him go. What did I accomplish today besides tearing my clothing up and getting bruised? I'll tell you what we accomplished. We looked about as castrated as we could possibly look. If we hadn't caught the guy, he'd have no idea just how castrated we were. When you can run five blocks from a federal agent and resist arrest and lie about your identity and still be told, go home, not to your home country, but go home to your apartment somewhere in New York, there's a goddamn problem. There's a serious problem. And that was under the old Immigration Service. So, you know, the lunacy has always been there. But this administration has become even more artful in figuring out how to sabotage any efforts at immigration law enforcement. You don't wind up with tens of millions of illegal aliens in this country by accident. This is not an accident, folks. This is willful neglect of the laws that are our first and last line of defense against terrorists and criminals. And so now we have to get to Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey. Christie engaged in a very heated argument, for those of you who saw the debate, with Senator Rand Paul, accusing him of blowing hot air in the Senate because he didn't know how to protect America. And the argument wasn't over immigration, it was the Patriot Act. And it was this business about the metadata and recording phone numbers. And I actually land on the side of recording the phone numbers as long as it's not a wiretap so you know which phone number is calling which phone number. That actually makes sense. Because you may at some point discover that a phone number is related to a terrorist, and then you're going to want to know who he's been talking to. So if you can backtrack and find out that 3 months ago that guy was connected with another phone, and you could find out whose phone that was, that could really be invaluable. I really don't have a problem with that. And some people may, and this is America. We're entitled to disagree. But think of the controversy that swirls around this, and think about Chris Christie talking about hugging the family members of the survivors. You know, I worked with a group called 9/11 Families for Secure America. They lost their children, their spouses, their parents. It was tough. It was tough. And Christie talks about hugging those people who just lost their loved ones. And in righteous indignation, screaming about Rand Paul spewing hot air. Well, Governor Christie has always supported comprehensive reform, providing lawful status to millions of illegal aliens in the United States. He was a federal prosecutor. He keeps talking about it. He knows that the terrorists have used false identity documents as an embedding tactic. They used fraud schemes to get lawful status. So think about that. You have this governor who talks about his experiences as a federal prosecutor who had to hug the family members of people killed on 9/11. And yet, what does he say? Well, the phone numbers he agrees with, but he's also willing to give illegal aliens identity documents. This is so astonishing, I don't even know where to begin. Here's something I want to read. I've read this before, but I think it's worth rereading it. This is the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. These were the lawyers and the agents who were assigned to work with the 9/11 Commission. They issued their own separate reports to supplement the 9/11 Commission report. This was printed by the government printing office. This wasn't a comic book. This isn't in the tabloid section of the supermarket. This is printed by the government printing office. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. And then it goes on and says, Congress gave the commission the mandate to study, evaluate, and report on immigration, non-immigrant visas, and border security as these areas relate to the events of 9/11. The staff report represents 14 months of such research. It is based on thousands of pages of documents that we reviewed from the State Department, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Department of Defense, approximately 25 briefings on various border security topics, and more than 200 interviews. We are grateful to all who assisted and supported us along the way. This wasn't a minor report. This wasn't a 10-minute, what do you think we ought to do, let's scratch our heads. Over a year went into this. 200 interviews. All those agencies provided records. This is serious. Page 47 of this report says the following. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Working Program, or SAW, after falsely claiming that he'd picked beans in Florida. And then we get to page 98. And, you know, I'd love to have Mr. Christie explain to me, Mr. Prosecutor, Oh, I hugged the surviving family members. Oh, my God, the hot air coming out of the Senate. The hot air coming out of the Senate. The hot air coming out of people's mouths, perhaps, as well. Listen to this. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11 hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. Think of the Dreamers. Think of the program that Mr. Christie wants to give people lawful status. So many people that there will be no face-to-face interviews. There will be no field investigations. The man that prosecuted the terrorists and kept us all safe. Wow. Wow, Mr. Christie. I'd love someone to ask him this question, but don't hold your breath because the journalists have no stomach to draw the link between immigration and terrorism. Believe me, I know. I've spoken to enough producers who've reached out to me to go on programs about immigration, and everything was hunky-dory, and they were ready to send the limo to pick me up. And when they said, well, what's the biggest problem we have with Mr. Obama that is failure to enforce the immigration laws, I said, national security. Ding, 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 ding. Suddenly the limo was canceled. You are not allowed to make any statements that parallel what's in the 9/11 Commission report. Think about that. Think about willful blindness. None is as blind as he or she who will not see. So So let me go back to this. Oh, boy, I get torqued, don't I? But for good reason, folks. As already discussed, this could be accomplished, that is, the embedding process, by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit, for example, comprehensive immigration reform, if we're corrupt and stupid enough to enact it, okay, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Mr. Christie. Nobody asks him the questions because nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to hear it. I've taken issue with Ted Cruz because he wants to have a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. I've not heard him make a similar statement recently. He needs to answer that. He really needs to tell us what that plan looks like for him. But here's the point. Here's the point. One of the things that he said during the debates was that he had sponsored legislation to strip U.S. citizens of their citizenship should they go to the Middle East and fight on the side of the terrorists, seeing this as an act of war against America. I agree completely. I agree 1,001%. If you go fight on the side of ISIS, if you go fight on the side of Al-Qaeda, if you go fight on the side of al-Nusra, I don't care what terrorist organization, you're gone. Tear up that passport. You're out of here, pal, and we are not letting you back in. That door only swings one way. We do not need terrorists wandering around our towns and cities waiting for that phone call calling them to action, or waiting for that morning when they wake up with a brain spasm and self-motivate themselves into killing. Goodbye, good riddance. Please don't let the door hit you on the backside. That said, why is it that nobody talked about the fact that we have naturalized terrorists, and not just once or twice? Again, this comes back to the lack of integrity to the immigration system. Understand the problem. I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine back on January 22nd. I called it Sleeper Cells, the Immigration Component of the Threat. Here's an interesting story. On April 16th, 2015, Fox News posted an Associated Press report entitled Ohio Man Accused of Traveling to Syria Plotting a Terror Attack. That Ohio man was Abdurrahman Sheikh Mohammed, a naturalized United States citizen who was born in Somalia. He was arrested by the FBI and charged with providing material support to a terror organization, two counts, and lying to an FBI agent about his travel to Syria. He allegedly had claimed to have only traveled to Turkey when he had actually gone to Syria. The electronic communications that the FBI were able to eavesdrop on were posted as part of the information in the indictment charging this guy. He had had a back and forth with his brother, who was subsequently killed in combat in Syria, where the brother asks him, "Have you gotten your papers done?" He said, "Yes, I just became a citizen." The brother basically said, "Well, when are you getting your passport?" He said, "I applied for it. And as soon as I get my U.S. passport, I'm heading to you. Do you want me to go through Kenya, or should I go directly to Syria?" And the brother said, "Come directly to me." Now stop and think about it. Obviously, he had to have lied on his application for U.S. citizenship, because one of the questions they ask you, and I believe it's in Part 11, is, have you an involvement in any foreign organizations? Have any of those organizations been involved with terrorism? So think about that. If the government knew, if immigration knew that this guy had been involved in this business with ISIS or with this other group, I forgot which group he's involved with, but it's one of those who are our enemy, they never would have given him citizenship. So he had to have lied. He's in his early 20s, so even if he gets 20 years in jail for the crimes for which he's accused, he gets out in his 40s, still young enough to do harm. And it's reported that he came back here, trained in doing burglaries so that he could grab firearms and kill soldiers and kill law enforcement, just like we saw in Tennessee recently. Why would we not want to deport this guy after he comes out of jail? All that we have to do is charge him additionally with committing fraud on his application for citizenship and take away his U.S. passport and kick him out of the country. Not done by this administration. So while Cruz says, let's take the citizenship from American citizens, I want to make sure we don't give terrorists citizenship in the first place. Nobody talks about that. Let's consider another example. Now, this one is really crazy. The FBI issues a press release. This is January 29th of this year. The press release, naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia added to FBI list. Here are three paragraphs from that press release that provide all the information you need to know. This is really chilling, folks. Listen to this. FBI press release. Again, not a supermarket tabloid. Liban Haji Muhammad, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia, has been named to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists. By the way, that is not like an Academy Award, although the way they phrase it, it almost sounds like an accolade, doesn't it? Liban Haji Muhammad, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia, has been named to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists, and a reward of up to $50,000 is being offered for information leading to his arrest and conviction. Muhammad is charged with providing material support and resources to Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab, a Somali-based terrorist organization. Traveling with his U.S. passport. Muhammad is thought to have left the United States on or about July 5th, 2012. Isn't that nice? He stayed to celebrate the 4th of July weekend with us. How wonderful. And then says this. Before his departure, the 29-year-old lived in Northern Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C., where he worked as a cab driver. It is important for us to locate Muhammad because he has knowledge of the Washington, D.C. area's infrastructure, such as shopping areas, metro, airports, and government buildings. This makes him an asset to his terrorist associates plot attacks on U.S. soil. Why did we naturalize him in the first place? You know, maybe he was naturalized as a baby because his parents brought him here. Or maybe he naturalized more recently, and then you got to wonder about the background investigation they did. But here we go again. Then we've got Faisal Shahzad. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, became a naturalized citizen less than a year before he set off that SUV bomb in Times Square. Luckily, it fizzled. It didn't kill anybody. Luckily. Dumb luck. The judge at sentencing said to Shahzad, hey, you just took an oath of citizenship. And he said, yeah, I lied. I hate your country. I hate your way of life. I hate your government. And he went on about how terrible the United States is. He lied on his application. Now, there's a shock. And his goal was to kill as many Americans as possible. And we gave this guy United States citizenship. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, let's look at the Tsarnaev brothers. Both had green cards. One went on for citizenship naturalization. The other guy applied, and they had some problems with it, so he was under review when they carried out the attacks. The whole family is a great suspicion, should be to everybody, but certainly I look at it through a slightly different prism, having been an immigration agent for 30 years. Here's a family that says, we cannot go home. Credible fear of reprisals, of persecution, or worse, because of race, religion, ethnicity, political orientation, whatever. We cannot go back to Russia. Please let us stay in America. And we said, okay, you can stay in America. And as soon as we gave them lawful status, they voluntarily hopped on airplanes, and guess what? They went back to Russia. Why didn't somebody open up an investigation and say, what are we doing? If they really had a credible fear, why did they willfully, on their own, travel back to the Soviet, well, not to the Soviet Union, but to Russia? There was no regime change. They lied. And they killed people in the United States. And then their sister is out there floating around for more than a year after the attack and gets arrested by police because she threatened to blow up her ex-boyfriend. Do you see a pattern here? I think this is a family with explosive personalities. So she's threatening to kill her boyfriend. That's why she gets arrested. Why wasn't she reeled in as soon as those brothers were identified? Because clearly, there's a question about whether or not she lied about political asylum, which is a felony. This is not inconsequential. By the way, in the case of Faisal Shahzad, what's really remarkable was Ray Kelly, the New York City Police Commissioner back then. And remember, the New York City Police Department is probably the most sophisticated in the United States, or certainly one of the most sophisticated. We even have detectives operating overseas to supplement the information that the CIA and FBI provide to the city of New York in terms of terrorist threats. Very, very sophisticated department. Ray Kelly, the police commissioner, former commissioner of U.S. Customs, not a dummy, not an inexperienced, naive guy, described Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, as a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. Do you know how old Faisal Shahzad was when he came here? He was 20 years old, and he came on a student visa from Pakistan. How in the world is that guy homegrown? In what home was he grown? Homegrown? Really? Really? You see, the message is you must never, ever, under any circumstances, for any reason, connect immigration to terrorism, because then all kinds of terrible things are going to happen. People are going to demand that we enforce our immigration laws. And it's remarkable that the Anti-Defamation League, and I used to be a B'nai B'rith president, on their website last year said that I am an anti-immigrant, whatever, really nasty stuff. And they said that I had the nerve, along with some other people that they named, to link immigration to terrorism. I just read excerpts from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. The 9/11 Commission has similar passages. I linked it, or did the 9/11 Commission find the nexus between immigration and terrorism? But you see, this is what is now happening. That is why, if you talk about the 9/11 Commission, it's okay to talk about it in conjunction with NSA and telephones and that sort of thing. But God forbid you should say, wait a minute, the 9/11 Commission was also very strong on this nexus between immigration and terrorism. And I am telling you, on numerous occasions, I've been contacted by TV programs, which is probably why I haven't been on in a while, and they said, what's the biggest threat we're facing if Mr. Obama won't enforce the laws? And they were hoping I would, you know, the usual pablum. Well, he's undermining the rule of law. Well, you know what? Most people don't care about the rule of law, unfortunately, in the United States. I'm serious. It's a weak argument. Congress loves that argument because it gives them the opportunity to once again pound the podium. Remember, those podium thumpers. But it's not going to get anybody so upset that they're going to start screaming, we've got to enforce the immigration laws. Because let's remember the agenda. Let's remember political reality. How many people believe in the rule of law when they have radar detectors on their dashboard? How many people believe in the rule of law when you know they cheated on those tests back in high school and college? How many people believe in the rule of law when they run to the outhouse if they dare get a piece of correspondence with the IRS return address in the upper left corner of the envelope? I mean, certainly it's not fun dealing with the IRS, but there are people that live in abject fear. It could be that they're conservatives and they know what the Obama administration has used the IRS for, so maybe that's a separate issue and one that we should certainly discuss. And I'm not being partisan. I'm registered as a Democrat. Those of you who know me long enough know that. Everybody should be treated equally. I thought that's what our government was supposed to be about. But seriously, so many people fudge in so many ways that rule of law isn't going to get anybody to stay awake at night. But telling people that the failures to enforce our immigration laws and secure our borders could allow terrorists and criminals into the country, which is why this whole thing about Kate Steinle and the sanctuary cities created such a big stir. Of course, it's off the headlines now. Give it 3 more months, nobody will remember Kate's name. They won't even remember sanctuary cities. The average American has an attention span shorter than a goldfish, for Pete's sake. Understand that suddenly people said, my God, there might be criminals living among us who shouldn't be here. Yes, there are. See, people that run the border aren't undocumented, folks. They're uninspected. Uninspected. They are trespassing. And you know, if God forbid you walked into your house and saw somebody sitting in your living room watching your TV, sipping your soda, maybe having some of your Haagen-Dazs ice cream, reflexively, instinctively, what's the first thing you would say to somebody if you confronted them and they're in your house? What are you doing here? And any answer they're going to give you isn't probably going to be the truth anyway. I stopped by to use the bathroom. I needed a glass of water, whatever. We don't know why these people who were here, and we're talking about millions. Think what just 19 terrorists did to us on September 11th, 2001. Not just to us. The whole world changed on that day. The whole world changed on 9/11. 19 people. This planet is inhabited by, where are we up to now, 7 billion people. 19 human beings committed a heinous act beyond comprehension. And that act reverberated clear across the world. And all it took, 19 young men with box cutters and airplane tickets. Box cutters and this wasn't the Manhattan Project and the atom bomb. Just 19 men with box cutters and airplane tickets. Could you ever imagine an airplane ticket as a deadly weapon? It's stunning. And the 9/11 Commission did this exhaustive research, 14 months, 200 interviews, gazillions of documents. Nobody references that report. Because at the root cause, the root ability of the terrorists to attack us, to kill so many people, to wreak such havoc upon us, at the root cause, at the very bottom of it, the very bottom, was immigration failures. And we can't talk about that. Because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the schools, the businesses, it goes on and on, want three things. They want a never-ending flood of foreign tourists to come to the United States and spend their money. They want foreign students to attend our schools, and right now there's over 1 million of those, and China sends us the most. And they want cheap, cheap, cheap labor. And not just the bottom rung, increasingly, they're gunning for the middle class. They're gunning for the middle class, whom Alan Greenspan referred to as the privileged elite Americans with skills, who he said were earning a wage premium because they were not being forced to compete with foreign workers for their jobs. Our immigration laws shield American workers from foreign workers. And Greenspan flat out said on April 30th, 2009, at a hearing conducted by Chuck Schumer over at the Senate immigration hearing, Greenspan said, we've got to stop shielding American workers. And if we could stop shielding them, this privileged elite, that's how we described American middle class workers, the privileged elite. If we could stop shielding them and remove that wage premium, cut their salaries, in other words, we could greatly reduce wage inequality between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. In other words, let's make sure that the guy with that PhD or the master's degree only earns pennies more than the guy that dropped out of high school. That is Alan Greenspan's dream for America. That is Chuck Schumer's dream for America. That is Nancy Pelosi's dream for America. And that is the dream for America by Rand Paul, and Ted Cruz and anybody else who thinks that we should be bringing in hundreds of thousands of high tech workers, even as tens of thousands of American workers who have the experience, the education, and the background are being fired and being forced to train their replacements. But did you hear anybody about legal immigration and about this notion of bringing in high tech workers when Americans are losing their jobs and losing their homes? These are campaign issues, folks. And when you look at the way they rank the issues, they love the charts and these pollsters. I hate the pollsters. I hate the pollsters. Because you have politicians chasing after a poll. They want to sit perhaps on top of that poll, and then maybe it could penetrate. Now, there's an image. Imagine a politician with that poll rammed up his tail. I mean, this is insanity. Chasing a poll is not what a leader is about. And that's probably why Donald Trump is resonating. Because he's not chasing any poll. But they're chasing the polls. And then they say, well, what's the biggest issues for America? And they say, well, the economy, unemployment, national security, immigration. You know what? The economy is immigration. You know what? National security, immigration. You know what? Immigration is immigration. Wow, the top three items on the list are all the same. It's not three different items. It's immigration, and then again, it's immigration. So suddenly, immigration goes from number three to numbers one, two, and three, and instead of being of concern to, I don't know, 30% of the Americans or 20%, immigration is of concern to 70% of all Americans. They just don't know it. And they don't know it because the news media refuses to report the truth, with a couple of exceptions. I love going on One American News Network. I love going on Newsmax. Nobody has a problem with me talking about the nexus between immigration and national security. If that's my opinion, that's my opinion. And you know what? I'm entitled to those opinions, and I earned them. I've arrested terrorists to listen to Mr. Christie and all that he's done. I've put handcuffs on terrorist suspects, folks. I've interrogated terrorist suspects. And in 1976, I tripped over a terror plot in Israel to blow up an Israeli oil refinery, and we prevented that attack. This isn't speculation or conjecture for me. So when I listened to Governor Christie spouting, and I disagreed with Rand Paul, by the way, but to be as nasty as that and scream about hot air, let me tell you, look in the mirror and see how you're fogging the mirror up, Mr. Christie. Because what Chris Christie has done is to support reform that would give millions of illegal aliens identity documents. And if he's changing his position, then let's hear him come forward. And if you're in the position, folks, if you're at a town hall meeting with these politicians and they make these statements, we need to bring in hundreds of thousands of the world's best and brightest. And when these politicians that say it in the next breath talk about American exceptionalism, what do they mean? If you truly believe in American exceptionalism, then the world's best and brightest are called Americans. So when some politician stands there in that town hall meeting and everyone's screaming, hey, isn't that great? We're going to bring in hundreds of thousands of foreign workers so we can lead. Yay! Who's we and what is leading and who's America? See, America isn't trees and cities and mountains. America is its people. And with Americans in increasing numbers falling out of the middle class below the poverty line, with Americans losing their jobs and their homes, America is not leading and it's not going to lead. As more remittances are wired out of the country, America is not going to lead. As more foreign workers have access to our high-tech companies, so it's easy for them to hack our computers, as we saw with the theft of all that information from all those federal employees because a Chinese company was operating within our country. That's not leading. That's not leading. We are educating our enemy. That's not leading. It's putting money in people's pockets, but it's not leading. And when some politician stands there and starts talking about bringing in more foreign workers, every American in that room should be standing up and screaming just two words. Two words. Citizens first. Citizens first. Before you hire a foreign worker, get an American into that job. Before you educate a foreign student and then say, we have to now give these people green cards because we educated them. Don't educate them. Educate American kids. I would rather build schools and universities than jails. Rick Perry, and I've spoken about it before, I'm going to speak about it again. Rick Perry was on Fox and Friends about a week ago, and he was talking about support for Kate's Law, meaning Kate Steinle, the 32-year-old woman who was slaughtered for no damn reason. I support Kate's Law, which really parallels what we did with Al D'Amato back 30 years ago, where we created a law that made unlawful reentry for criminal aliens a 20-year crime. Not a 5-year crime, a 20-year crime. And for the most part, these aliens were getting at least 4 years in jail. This is 5 years in jail. This is the old story of let's create another law. Did you hear anybody talk about hiring new agents? The best laws in the world mean nothing without the agents. It's a Ferrari with an empty gas tank. We don't need law. We need manpower. We need resources. We need funding. We need boots on the ground. boots on the ground. So Rick Perry said, I'm in favor of Kate's Law, and I'm against sanctuary cities. And that may have been Brian Kilmeade or maybe Steve Ducey. Somebody asked him, well, where do you stand on in-state tuition? Oh, that's a state-by-state thing and, you know, states' rights. And if they weren't here, it wouldn't have been an issue, but they're here, and, you know, and he changed topics. Folks, if a governor of a state is willing to provide in-state tuition for illegal aliens, I don't care what you call it, I call that a sanctuary state. I call that, I know how to secure the border. Do you believe in sanctuary cities? I know how to secure the border. Well, what would you do with the people who are here? First, I know how to secure the border better than anybody. Well, do you think people should be able to, I secure the border. He was worse on that than Donald Trump. All he wanted to talk about is what he did to secure the border. But if you get past us and you're here, well, then we take out the keys to the kingdom and we give you in-state tuition. And I guarantee you that Mr. Perry, with or without this bluff and bluster routine, will probably also then make the point that when someone graduates from university that we educated, it's foolish to send them home because now we can't take advantage of the training that we gave them. Why are we doing this to American children? Do you want to end the cycle of violence in Baltimore and St. Louis and elsewhere? Educate children. Give them opportunities. Give them hope. Not BS speeches, not nonsense. Opportunities based on skills that we can give them. It doesn't even have to be a college education. My dad was a plumber. And I find it so remarkable. We had dueling hard luck stories from the politicians. You know, John Kasich's father was a letter carrier, and Marco Rubio's father attended bar. And I relate to that. My dad was blue collar. My mom was blue collar. My pop was a plumber. He was a tradesman, a construction worker. He didn't do the repair work. He worked on construction. In fact, he worked on the World's Fair. And it was delightful that on weekends, like when he was working overtime, I would go to work with him. And I actually got to ride on that Swiss Sky Ride that went over the Trade Center. Over the Trade Center, my goodness, my mind is on the World Trade Center today. Went over the World's Fair. You know, I'm giving you a bird's eye view. My dad was a construction worker. And we also had this lack of secure income. My father would be working great and making overtime as he did at the World's Fair, which is the only time we bought a new car, a Chevy Bel Air back in 1964. But there were times he'd come through that door and the job he was working on either wrapped up or they ran out of money or something had happened. And my dad would walk in and he'd have that look and suddenly the guy that had this ramrod posture was kind of bent over. And my mother would make eye contact and all of a sudden the tears would start to flow. And he might be out of work for 3 or 4 months. And suddenly we were living on tuna fish and pasta and cheese. I know what that's like. But what's remarkable is that the politicians that keep on talking about that are generally the same politicians that talk about the work Americans won't do. Didn't their fathers do that work? Are they serious? You see, we have to have people who are consistent. We have to have politicians who put Americans, I don't care what party, I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party, because both parties suck. Both parties, I compare them to the Medellin and Cali drug cartels. They are criminal organizations competing for control of turf and will literally stop at nothing to gain control of the turf. And when people die, it's the cost of doing business. It's collateral damage. They don't care. If anything, it might give them an opportunity to push an agenda, you know, guns, whatever. You want to push an agenda? Go after the drugs. Secure the damn border so the narcotics and the drug traffickers don't get in. And by the way, when the drugs get in, the people that are part of those drug trafficking organizations come in with it. They don't mail it in and that's the end of it. Establish an entire organization the way you would a car dealership. You got your salesmen, you got your enforcers, you got your money people. It is an entire industry, folks. And this, again, based on experience, not conjecture. When I was assigned to DEA intelligence back in 1988, I had a brain spasm. And I decided, I probably spoke about this last week, but I'm going to make the point again real quickly. I started to do an arrest analysis. Who are we arresting? I was in shock in New York City back then. 60%, 60% of the people arrested by the DEA task force in New York for drug trafficking and related crimes, and these are mostly crimes of violence, by the way, were foreign-born. Foreign-born. This isn't me slamming foreign-born people. This is just stating reality. We have a problem with criminals coming into the United States when they sneak in. That's the problem. You know, they're uninspected. We don't know why they're here. They might be fugitives from justice. There's a whole bunch of possibilities. And in fact, that was the line that that Chris Christie used when Rand Paul said, you know, I don't care if you want to pull up the phone records of terrorists, but not people who aren't terrorists. And Christie's answer was, we don't know who the terrorists are. You see, Christie gets it, folks. He's not stupid. He's an extremely shrewd politician. He's a smart guy. And he's right. We don't know who the terrorists are, and that's why they have to do it the way they do it. But when you're dealing with aliens who snuck into the country in the middle of the night to avoid the inspections process, do you think they're trustworthy? Are you willing to give them an official identity document without even a face-to-face interview or a field investigation? All they would have to do is mail in paperwork, answer the questions on a form, and check off the boxes in the right place and submit a fee, and we give them an ID. We haven't necessarily even verified their country of citizenship. We have no way of knowing their true name. We have no way of knowing when they actually got here. Then if the law says, well, they have to have been here for 6 years, I guarantee you that the date of entry will be whatever it needs to be. If they say 8 years, then the year will be different. If they say 3 years, the year, it doesn't matter. They will write down whatever they need to say, and they will use this to conceal their true identities if they're fugitives in other countries. And we've seen it before. How many Nazi war criminals hid in the United States quite well for decades? I believe they just dug another one of these rat bums out. On death's doorstep, undoubtedly, 90-something years old or whatever. You know, the good die young, and these cretins seem to suck our air forever, these Nazi bums. But that's how the Nazi war criminals came here. They concealed their identities. They were admitted through the front door, and they were hiding in plain sight. And we gave them their documents. Christie knows better. Christie knows better. And that's what galls me. Rick Perry has to know better also. In-state tuition. Oh, we're not going to talk about that. See, it's not a left-right issue. Most politicians are on the wrong side of the immigration issue because they know where their bread is buttered. Did you listen to Donald Trump talk about his campaign contributions to everybody? He doesn't even know who these people are. He's just writing checks. And he told you why he writes those checks. So when he makes a phone call, he gets what he wants. It's astonishing. Basically, this is bribery, plain and simple. It is bribery. It blows me away. It blows me away. You have people who are taking the money and twisting the laws and defunding the programs. You know, they're talking about defunding Planned Parenthood. I'm not going to get into that debate. That's outside my bailiwick. Although, if those videos were accurate and not doctored, it was pretty disgusting, I got to tell you. It really turned my stomach, you know, having a swap meet, almost as though it was like Mr. Potato Head, but except we're talking about human embryos. It's disgusting beyond words, very disturbing, if that was the case. You know, I'm very skeptical about everything being told to us, because if a politician said it, it's probably a big, fat, juicy lie in this era, which is why there's such anger. Because the American people finally figured out that everything they're being told is a big, fat, juicy lie. But they have defunded immigration. It's not the laws, folks. It's the resources that are allocated to enforce those laws that's lacking. The intentional defunding of immigration. And when the sequestration of funds happened, the Obama administration seized the opportunity to take still more money from immigration and actually turn tens of thousands of criminal aliens loose on city streets and back into the immigrant communities that supposedly, you know, we have to be careful about the immigrants. Goodness gracious. Goodness gracious. So that's what needs to be asked. And really and truly, if you are in the position to go to a town hall meeting and ask those questions, you should be asking the politicians, what you want to do with immigration, does it square with the 9/11 Commission report? Better yet, why don't you flat out ask them, have you even read the 9/11 Commission report? And while you're at it, ask them if they ever read the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Because if they did, then they have to understand that what they are proposing violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Even as we're being told by the leaders in the Congress that this country has never been at a greater risk for a terrorist attack. Never been at greater risk for a terrorist attack. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? But yet they are willing to ignore the 9/11 Commission report, make believe it was never written, make believe the investigation was never conducted, so that they can get their campaign contributions. Isn't that astonishing? Do you realize how dangerous this is? It infuriates me, and it should infuriate you. When they talk about unemployment, understand, we are admitting more authorized foreign workers than the number of new jobs we're creating. We can never run up the down staircase fast enough to make any headway, because that escalator is picking up speed. That escalator is picking up speed. And nobody talks about that. So this entire all-consuming focus on the Mexican border, for the most part, kept the discussion away from the other issues. And even when Mr. Rubio, and I commend him for raising some of those issues, didn't say anything about hiring more agents. Why didn't some of the journalists there say, hey, Senator, do you have enough agents to do the job? Do you have enough agents? That's never a question that's asked. It's the defunding of immigration enforcement that got us into the mess. And it goes back to Jimmy Carter. It goes back to Ronald Reagan. Reagan knew that we had millions of illegals, or at least we thought we had 1 million illegal aliens in the United States. And the message came from headquarters that the emphasis would be purely on the border and have nothing to do with interior enforcement. And my bosses looked at me and said, we're screwed. We need an adequate number of agents on the border. But if you don't have a meaningful interior enforcement program with enough agents and resources, it's like playing baseball and having the outfielders sit out the game. So you look at the arguments being made by the politicians. You look at how they nibbled around immigration. They kind of carved their way around it. They managed to dodge the bullet. Dodge the bullet. But nobody ever got to the real core issues of immigration. And I guarantee you that they would, that the journalists aren't going to ask those questions. I mean, the first question, instead of asking Donald Trump about what he may have called women 12 years ago, not sure what that question was about. And if he said those things, it's pretty disgusting. But again, it might have been part of his nastiness, which is his shtick for his, you know, programs that he does, because that's what he does. That's how low we've all stooped in this country on TV. I don't really watch TV. I spend a lot of money on cable to watch the History Channel and the Discover Channel and so forth, but most of programming is kind of trash. But wouldn't it have been an interesting question to say, with a show of hands, since they wanted to have a show of hands, how many members of the panel have read the 9/11 Commission report? How's that for an interesting question, boys and girls? How many folks on this stage that want to be the next commander-in-chief, want to be the next president of the United States, how many of you have read the 9/11 Commission report? Isn't that a fair question? With all the talk about ISIS and the NSA, why didn't they simply ask them? So here's my suggestion. Contact the news media wherever there's going to be a presidential debate and throw that into the mix. Why don't you ask these people if they've read the 9/11 Commission report so they're prepared to hit the ground running the day they're sworn in? Wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't that be an interesting question to ask? Just something for you to think about. the debates are coming. There'll be more of them. It's very important that we pay attention. It's very important that we participate by sending the questions in and communicating with the news media. But I will tell you flat out, folks, immigration is the key to all of those major challenges and threats that keep all of us awake at night. And the final point that I wanted to make, I know I started out saying it, I'm glad that I didn't let it escape my feeble brain, is this notion of political correctness. I want to give you a little bit of food for thought. Donald Trump said we have no time to be politically correct. I couldn't disagree with him more. I am always politically correct. Now, you may think, what is this guy talking about? In my judgment, from what I understand, from what we have been told, political correctness is about not using language that is offensive to people. And I'm not talking about obfuscating language. I mean, honest to God, language that insults, impugns, denigrates. Think of where the word denigrate came from. My kids have heard me use some pretty salty language. I think I've spent too many years in law enforcement. And I always joke that compared to some other words, the F word isn't so terrible. If it wasn't for that activity, none of us would be here. The N word is the problem. I remember when Furman, the detective of OJ notoriety, who's now a law enforcement consultant, was asked about the use of the N word. All kinds of controversy swirled around it. I don't have a problem with that because I've never used that word. I would never use that word. I find that word to be disgusting, and we all should. I similarly find terms like, well, I'm not going to use those terms, but terms that insult Jews or Asians or Latinos or Italians. We've all heard the language. Those words are awful. They're dehumanizing. They're inexcusable. I know that Obama used the N-word thinking he was making some point about something. I'm not sure. Again, I don't know what's between his ears. Maybe it's sawdust. I'm not sure. Those words are terrible, and they're inexcusable. And that, to me, is what political correctness is about. But the word alien, for example, has nothing to do with political correctness. We're told it's political correctness, and in so doing, we are avoiding a bigger issue. George Orwell said that in the time of tyranny, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. The artful use of language is propaganda. It's not political correctness. When people refuse to use the word alien, claiming that, oh, this is political correctness, when you say that, you're actually strengthening our opponents. Because the people that say we can't use the word alien want to get away from what the law is about. That's not political correctness. That's propaganda. The term alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. Not my definition. And it's not even a dictionary definition necessarily. That definition appears in the immigration and nationality laws of the United States. It's a statement of fact. It's telling people you are not a citizen. Well, wait a moment. If I went to France or I went to Canada and someone pointed a finger and said, hey, Mr. Cutler, you're not a citizen here. Are they insulting me or telling the truth? They're telling the truth. I'm not a citizen of Canada. I'm not a citizen of France. So how insulted should I be if someone said, you're not a citizen here? Oh, my God, how could you say that? No, they're right. I'm not. And that's all that the word alien means. The reason that they use that word that way and take it out and switch the word immigrant is so they could then say, oh, Cutler is anti-immigrant, you see. It's obfuscating the truth. So please, folks, I've heard too many smart people say, oh, we're too politically correct. No, you can't be too politically correct. We should always treat people honorably, decently, fairly. That's political correctness. We're talking about the obfuscation of the truth through the artful use of deceptive language, propaganda. That's what this is, not political correctness. And that's really important, because if you say that the use of the word alien is offensive to people politically correct, then you're saying there's something wrong with the word. There's nothing wrong with the word. There's something wrong with the concept for people that are trying to swindle us, swindle the American people. Big difference. So be clear about it. Just like when we're told it's anti-immigrant to want the laws enforced. No, it's not. It's pro-enforcement, not anti-immigrant. You see, words matter. Words matter. And you must never give territory to your opponents. We need a stand our ground law, and I'm not talking about firearms now. I'm talking about stand your ground when you're insulted. Stand your ground when the accusations fly. Stand your ground when people say things that are wrong, mean-spirited, and designed to intimidate. We're Americans. We have a spine. We know how to stand on our own 2 feet, and we know how to fight back. That's what we have to do. So please, let's think before we invoke that term political correctness. It is not a matter of being politically correct to not use the word alien. It's a matter of obfuscating the truth and propaganda. And that has nothing, I mean absolutely nothing to do with being PC, politically correct. Anyway, we are pretty much at the end of the 90 minutes that we use for the Michael Cutler Hour. I guess it's inflation, you know. It's always a good thing joining you at the end of the week so that we can play that game of catch-up, so that hopefully I can provide you with some perspectives that you're not going to hear in the media. And that's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate that the news media all too often has become a mechanism for propagating propaganda. It's an interesting connection of words. The American people need the truth. And we're not going to get the truth from certain news organizations, and that's fine. Then we move on. I'm not going to buy a faulty product, and we have to decide whether we're being told the truth, whether we're not being told the truth, and we should be insisting on it. And one of the things that you can do is reach out to news organizations, and when you think that they're not being square with us, when they're not being forthcoming, I don't know if it was Ben Carson, I believe it was, but I know that recently one of our politicians, and I think it was Carson, and I just love the way he ended his debate talking about removing half a brain and linking it to Washington. I thought it was brilliant. But again, he is a brain surgeon, literally. But, you know, we just need to understand that we can reach out to those news organizations and straighten them out, because it was Carson, again, that I believe said that the journalists are the only profession in the United States who are specifically protected by the First Amendment, by the Bill of Rights. They have an obligation, and we need to hold them accountable the way we hold our politicians accountable. And there's nothing wrong with writing op-eds. There's nothing wrong with making phone calls or sending emails and saying, listen, you need to square with people. You need to level with us. Lives are on the line. The future of America, the future of our children and parents are on the line. We have that obligation, folks. Let's live up to it. You know, I always like to remind people, democracy is not a spectator sport. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me this evening. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. Check out my article about heroin and border security, Front Page Magazine, and certainly The Social Contract, and check out my article about terrorism and immigration. And if you like what you see, please, folks, forward it to as many people as you can. Take part in my Bucket Brigade of Truth. Have a great weekend. See you next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.